You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Thursday. We got Mailbag Part 2 coming up. I hope you guys enjoyed Part 1. I saw a lot of interaction on Twitter from that, which is good. Shout out to AJ for quoting my boss. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News. And on the other line, to answer your questions, my co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, what's up, man?
Oh, not much. I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to answer some more, hopefully, non-Nate Millen-related questions.
If you're wondering how busy I am, Adam, on Central Time, beat me home from work today. So congratulations.
Rare. I got home. I actually left kind of early-ish today for me.
And I left about as late as I usually do. Just
it also helped that it snows 2 inches in Tennessee and nobody's on the road, so I got home a lot faster. That also was a huge plus because usually it takes me about 15, 20 minutes. Today took me like 10 because there was
getting the great freezing rain tonight, so everyone's going to drive like idiots tomorrow.
Oh, my God. But like, so since I lived in Syracuse for a while, I can drive in snow. Like, I don't understand how to. It's not hard. These people, like, it's snowing where it's like rain. It's literally just rain on the ground, and like, people are going like 10 miles an hour on the roads. And I'm just like, what are you doing? It's not that bad.
I cannot wait to get it over with tomorrow. Let's jump right into question number one from Ian Hansen. I believe he writes, I should know where, Blue HQ Media. That's right. Ian Hansen at @ENH_2 says, what makes this team so much different from last year? It seemed like last year this team was much better offensively. So let's bunk that myth right away. Their offensive rating last year was 109.5. Their offensive rating this year is 109.4. So it seems worse. Their half-court offense seems a little worse, but their overall offense, thanks to their better defense this year, is about the same. So what does make their half-court offense seem worse, Adam?
I think it's actually expectations, right? Last year,
we had
such low expectations for the offense that when it succeeded, it was awesome. This year, we have a much higher expectation than we had last year, and it's not as well. Someone not doesn't play as well. Individual players' expectations, I guess, have changed in a sense where I feel like, you know, Collison's overall stats are down. Thad's stats are probably, if not leveled off, down a little bit. I have to look at more. Turner's stats are about leveled off. You know, if you look at the Pacers' offense, it's been kind of like basically either a consistent or drop off from most guys, except for like Bojan and Sabonis, who've had a significant jump. And that's kind of
another thing is 8% worse on free throws than last year. I mean, that's some easy ones right there.
I also think he's maybe pointed to the fact that this team hasn't scored 100 points a few times in games. And that seems like it's like frustratingly bad. The offense, like, it doesn't move very well.
How many games have they not scored 100 and the other team has?
You know, I know they lost the Rockets 98-94.
Yeah, the Rockets was one.
Portland, you know, or Philly got to 100. Philly got to 100, but just barely. So
I only say that because when they don't, most of the time the other team doesn't because of the way the game is. Philly was 94-100, so barely.
Yeah.
Blazers was 93-103. Wolves was 91-101. So only three times. So I feel like when they score under 100, they're usually holding the other team to also a low total.
Yeah, I mean they're the second worst or second slowest team in the game pace, right? I guess they're
which is good for the way they play.
Yeah, I mean it's fine. So that's why this sort of, I think offensively though, what he is sort of pointing to is it seems like it's very stale this year. Maybe it's because we're seeing the same thing over again, and that could be, you know, when you see something over and over again, it becomes kind of stale in terms of that. And I guess in terms of the guys we expected to pop, they aren't popping, right? So, like, I would expect Tyreek to be in the top three or four in scoring on the team, and he's fifth. So that's sort of, I think, where that issue is at.
Yeah, I think you're seeing less or more, that's the word, more ISO ball than last year, too, which always looks really bad. They're averaging less passes per game. They're at 284.2 per game. Right now for this year, last year, they were a little bit higher than that. Yeah, they were actually 20 passes higher than that, basically, almost at 300. So I think you're seeing a little more ISO ball, which just looks ugly and is grinding to a halt and is less efficient. You know, stuff like that really matters. And, you know, when you're looking like a lot of offenses with what your eyes feel in that situation, and I understand why it seems worse, even though the numbers say it's pretty similar.
I think, too, some of it might be steals, or at least like steals turning into turnover points.
Yep. The half court offense, he's right. I think overall the fact that they're even is a lot of because of what you said, they're doing that.
Yeah, they just seem like they aren't converting as many turnovers into easy buckets, stuff like that. All kinds of stuff like that. So I don't know. I think a lot of it is expectations, but the team, it does feel a little stale. And the thing with the NBA, right, you always want to kind of be evolving, and that's a problem when you seem stale. I know it can produce decent, but like you always kind of want to be changing your offense. You know, many examples of Raptors who had that same iteration of DeRozan and Lowry forever, but I feel like a couple of years they brought a different element each year. This year it doesn't seem like they bring any new elements except for maybe Sabonis post-ups.
Yes, I agree with that. Let's move on to the next question. And before we start, I need to eat crow because I said that Collison for Ariza is an illegal trade. It turns out Collison for Ariza is a legal trade. Exactly legal. Neither player could make one fewer or more dollars for that trade to be legal.
Why is it legal?
Because the outgoing salary is between $6.5 million and $19.5 million for both teams. That means that you can make plus or minus $5 million from the other team.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So what's the rules if it's over 20?
So if it's over 20, it's 125% plus 100,000 is the most you can receive.
Okay.
And if it's under 6.5, it's 175% plus 100,000. So the trade machine has outgoing salaries calculated wrong. So I got that wrong on the fly. Sorry to Dan at Bleacher Report for his article. They got it right and we were wrong. So that makes it easier. We don't have to trade Tyreek away. But anyway, this one is a trade thing, which is why I said that. So at Dewan8_BigNick, who has flown into Pacers Twitter this year, an active member, says, I'm assuming he means this is trade-wise, and I'm almost positive he does. He says, Kemba, Beal, or Jamal Murray, who might be a better fit, and who would you personally want to see the Pacers make a trade for out of the three? I like Beal or Murray. They all seem like the types to get their own buckets, which might help Vic.
I mean, you know my answer. I think Bradley Beal would be a perfect fit here.
You've been on the Beal train for a while. I think Murray would be awesome. I think that there's no freaking way in hell that the Nuggets would even consider trading him. Unless you give them just a stupid high offer. So as much as I would like that, that's impossible. So
the thing you have to look at is what teams need centers, right? I mean, that's what the Pacers
have.
I mean, honestly, but speaking honestly, what teams need centers and what team, you know, for
Or youth.
Yeah, and actually the Wizards are the one team where that kind of makes sense because they have two guards. So they want to, you know, trade one guard for a center. That would make sense. That's why the Wizards make sense to me, because like I could see the way they're talking themselves into like a Miles Turner John Wall pairing. You know what I mean? I know you seem to think that's not possible, which it might not, because Beal is probably the better player, but I could see them talking themselves into that idea of like, oh, Turner, they're gonna run the pick and pop, but he's not gonna be as selfish as Howard is or like Gortat was. I don't know. You know, he's quieter, so Wall can kind of take control of the relationship. I could just see them talking themselves into that, is all.
Yeah, I think of the three mentioned, I would like Beal the most. Because I think he can do more off ball, which would allow Vic to still be the primary guy.
Who's the most realistic one, though?
Kemba, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't think they're going to trade him either. I think Beal's the most likely to be traded, and I don't think he's even likely to be traded. But I think that Kemba would be the most likely that the Pacers would get.
Yeah, Kemba could be on the market if the whole Charlotte thing goes south before the deadline.
Yeah, I think their new coach works with them, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, I don't know what the new organization wants to do, or the new GM wants to do, sorry.
Right. I forget his name. I mean, I should know that. Shoot.
Mitch Kupchak,
that's right, the Lakers guy, yep.
So, I mean, I don't know if they want to keep Kemba or not, or what the idea there, because you're probably going to be able to sign Kemba in free agency, but if you get him on trade, you're probably going to stay.
Yep.
But, I mean, the thing about Kemba is, for the right price, I would never say no to Kemba. Like I think,
right.
I don't know where you stand. Like, I agree you don't want to give up, like, a probably Turner or Sabonis, but if you have to give up on like a first and a salary kind of player, it probably is worth it, just because why not take a flyer on Kemba, who is a talented player, and see if make it work. Kind of like the way the Sixers took a flyer on Butler, where it's like, yeah, you gave up two decent players in Sarge and Covington, but it's not like you had to give up, you know, a first round pick, your nice Phoenix first round picks that you own, or it's Miami's first round picks, right, whatever the picks they own, stuff like that. Like, it's worth it because you get it, you know, you can see if it can work. If not, it doesn't work, you just kind of reevaluate because you're keeping those two core guys forever. So,
and it's worth it because you get Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, but like Kemba thing, like you could, right? I mean, I think Kemba makes what, 12 a year? So, exactly. Salaries is pretty easy.
Yeah.
I mean, you could basically put anyone, a Bojan, Collison, or somebody else. And even if you take on a bad salary, like you got to take on, what was he, like Marvin Williams or somebody like that, you could maybe be a rotation player. Like, it would be worth it. It just, if you give up Sabonis or Turner, it's probably too steep a price.
Yeah, they're another team like Washington that needs a center, though, if you really want to think of it like that.
But they need a center to go with Kemba, not because they need a center.
Right, right.
They would be a team looking for youth.
Yes, they would be.
they're like, we want like an Aaron Holiday and a TJ Leaf and a Bojan maybe.
If they really wanted those guys, they can have them.
No, they could. I don't know about Aaron Holiday, but yeah.
I don't think that any of those guys will get traded to the Pacers. But in order, I think I would like Beal, Kemba, Jamal. In terms of most likely to be traded, I'd go Beal, Kemba, Jamal.
I'd go Kemba one more likely to be traded.
But in terms of price tag, I think I'd go Jamal, Beal, Kemba. So
okay, I think Kemba's most likely to be traded. And price, I mean, I would give up a lot for Beal, so that's beside the point.
Yeah. That's a good question, though. Next up, we have Dwayne Wright at D_Wright09 says, thoughts on the future of the point guard position. Does Kojo or DC become the bridge player until Holiday's ready? Does Vic claim the one? Do you expect Pritchard to trade for a J Wall or a Kemba? See, last question for Kemba answer. John Wall, no chance that they're going to get all this future flexibility and trade for John Wall.
Well, I mean, if everything strikes out next summer, maybe. They have a lot of money. That's why. I mean,
that's true.
They get too much money, but because, you know, at some point you're going to have to pay Vic $35, $38 million a year. So that's where, you know, you don't want to have two $40 million guys.
So Vic has never played without one of Kojo or DC this year. I think they really want to groom him as more of a wing just because they want him to guard wings, not because they necessarily want him to, quote unquote, be a wing because he handles the ball like a one on offense anyway. So we've both said on the show we think Kojo is more likely to be the future of the point guard position. He's younger, he fits better. Yeah, he's a bridge. He fits the defense, and yeah, he's a bridge until either they get the next guy or Holiday it turns out to be what they hope he can be.
But we also both agree we would love to see Oladipo become the main ball handler.
Well, he is the main ball handler. He's just there's a point guard with him to guard.
Yeah, we would love to see a bigger. Wing player next to him instead of having going small next to him, you go bigger. So you like a Beal, for example, but like another, you know, like I would love to see a lineup and I don't know if it would work, but like a Bojan at the two next to Vic at one and McDermott at three and stuff like that. You know, I don't know if that would work, but something like that, because at the end of the day, I think that's kind of the next level for Vic, right? It's like, you know, he is a point guard. I mean, he's a two guard hybrid, whatever you want to call him, but like he's a really good point guard. And if you could put two good defensive players at your guard spots, like, if you're able to get size out there, it could really help you out too.
I already think he's kind of playing point guard on offense. I mean, he takes it up sometimes. He always is the initiator of the play.
They could bring another guy in on the defensive end who could that size, you know, when they play
the guard small wings, guys, yes, that would be the difference. Yes,
you could have two guys in guard wings and one guy. You know, I mean, that's the difference where I see it. Because I agree with you 100%. They just when they go with Collison or they go with even Aaron Holiday, future might be kind of useless if those guys are not producing offensively at such a high rate 3-point shot, which Holiday might be the perfect guy because he can shoot really well from three and that could kind of be game changing. But they're kind of used that they're not going to be able to shoot the three like at 40% because they're not doing much defensively, and offensively they're just kind of sitting there.
And that's, if you want to keep going on this question too, that's the trouble almost with Wall is Wall has to have the ball. Zach Lowe wrote about how he literally never moves when he doesn't have the ball. I mean, when he is trying on defense, he's a good defender, but he rarely tries on defense. So unless Pritchard can have him move off the ball and play defense, he's not necessarily the greatest fit ever. But that's, you know, maybe he's pouty in Washington. Who knows?
I mean, I think that whole situation is going to blow up. I don't know who gets traded where and what. Did we talk about this on there or off there yesterday?
We did both, honestly.
Okay. So I don't know about that. I mean, that's the one spot right now, but who knows what else happens. I guess with Vic too, you would like to have some guy who could actually be a threat with the ball in his hand so he could get Vic the ball, you know, when if they, you know what I mean? Like somebody the defense respect when he has the ball, because Vic can actually move off the ball pretty well, get to a spot. He could be also a really effective player.
Imagine if Vic had the space to do the shot fakes that Darren Collison does.
Or imagine if Vic just had the ability to like run around and basically get screens off the ball to be able sit wide open in the corner.
They run floppy for him sometimes this year. Off ball.
Yeah, but half the time it ends up getting cut off or double teamed. They don't worry about it.
He always shoots the three, and when he catches it in the set, he rarely ever dribbles out of it.
I guess here's the thing I would say for Oladipo. Would you rather him be next to a really good guard or a really good
wing. Center? Done, wing.
Okay. The problem is, I mean, I guess it is pretty effective, right? The wing duo has been pretty effective in the NBA.
But his wing defense is so valuable too that like maybe you want a point guard to guard wings point guards next to him. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, you have two guys then who can play awesome defense, which you would love.
Yeah.
Can't complain about that. No, can't win too many good defensive players. Nothing wrong with that. Right.
Tyreek, who I staunchly defended his perimeter defense before this year, has made me look stupid. Surprise, surprise.
It's been early, though, so again, we should wait.
Yes. Read Kalen's piece about Tyreek. Go ahead. As I referenced yesterday at the end of the mailbag, my favorite person's Twitter name to read with the next question, at Tinu Heat, whose name is Twerk Turkleton. Love it. He says, how well do the Pacers need to finish the season to attract a number two for Oladipo in free agency? Does a second round exit get them enough recognition from a player of that caliber?
Now East Finals.
At the end, he says, also hashtag justice for Joe Young. Yes, Joe Young is balling in China. We need to give Joe Young his justice.
We did that.
But he's not an NBA player. Poor Joe Young. Yeah, I don't know quite how if the second round. Denver, it was. Yeah, that's who it is. Denver is usually the litmus test for this. Like 2 years ago when Denver made the playoffs and then got Paul Millsap, people attributed, you know, them finally doing stuff in the playoffs. What?
They missed the playoffs. Have they not made the playoffs yet? What they're doing?
Who was it? Was it not Denver? Who was the team?
Denver, who got Paul Millsap after having an impressive young core, but they didn't make the playoffs. Right. I mean, that was a circumstance thing where the Hawks didn't want to bring Millsap back, and then Olin really offered him max money. I think too.
They didn't even offer him that much.
Well, 3 years, 100 is max per year money, not max overall contract.
With a team option last year.
That's right, but like I think that was a whole different situation. The problem is like what stars you're trying to attract, right? Like it would be Butler or Kawhi, and I don't see either of them. Maybe Butler coming here if
Tony. Someone in the Paul Millsap elk isn't crazy though.
No, but who's in the Paul Millsap? Like you're talking Chris Middleton. Like who out there's going to be afraid is going to be in the Paul Millsap elk next summer?
Tobias Harris, Chris Middleton.
I don't know if Harris is quite in the Millsap.
Oh, I do.
I think Tobias Harris is a notch below that.
I like Tobias Harris quite a bit, even though his defense is poo.
Yeah, his defense is atrocious.
It's not. Yeah, it's not.
It's bad. It's very bad. It's very bad.
It's not great. I will give you that. Eric Bledsoe in that tier.
I don't know.
Paul Millsap himself might be in that tier.
So the Paul Millsap tier I view as Paul Millsap was what? Probably. He made the All-Star game that year or the previous year. Like, Goran Dragic? That's one. Is he going to be a free agent, though?
He is a $19 million player option.
So he might opt out of that because that's he could probably get 3 years or something.
One more three-year deal. Harrison Barnes.
So that's fair. Barnes, again, is the – so like, I guess Barnes, Dragic, and Middleton are probably the three I would maybe put in that tier. Barnes, I don't know because he's been a disaster in – not a disaster, whatever, but he hasn't been as good obviously in Dallas, but I think he's still a good player in the right situation.
Yeah, I do. And when he's not the number one option.
Yeah, when he just kind of gets to be a guy and gets to be like – sometimes offense, sometimes they don't. And then when he's not relied on as being like the failsafe, like that was his problem with Golden State. Everybody just left him open because it's like he's the worst shooter of all of them.
Do we think the Bucks will keep Middleton and Bledsoe? You know, they're going to be an expensive team if they have to keep all of those guys.
I mean, I think they'll keep Middleton. I'm not sure you want Bledsoe.
Bledsoe would be an upgrade at point guard for sure for the Pacers.
Yeah, but you watched the playoffs last year.
That's true.
Maybe Terry Rozier is the right guy, right? Isn't he a free agent?
No. Terry Rozier is so overrated, man.
He's a free agent, right? At the end of the year?
Restricted and overrated.
Whoa, if you worst combo. He's not going back to Boston at this rate. I mean,
God, I do not want Terry Rozier one bit, man.
Okay, but I'm just saying he could be in that mold a little bit.
That would scare me.
I like Terry Rozier in the playoffs last year. That was really, really good.
He was good in the playoffs last year. Did you know Terry Rozier's rookie year, he shot 35% at the rim?
Okay, but he played really good last year, Tony.
Woof. He did not play last year. He played good in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, did you know he made Eric Bledsoe look really, really bad in the playoffs last year, yet you won Eric Bledsoe still for some reason?
He sure did. Yes, I think Eric Bledsoe has a much more substantially good body of work than Terry Rozier.
Yeah, but you're betting on potential. Rozier's what, 23, 24? Bledsoe in his 30s yet?
No, he is not. I think he is 27.
Is he really that young? Oh, my God. I feel like.
Yeah, dude. Isn't that crazy?
It feels like, because I remember that prolonged contract with 28. You're right. That prolonged. That holdout prolonged against with the Suns. It felt like 10 years ago.
I know. Dude, he bounces around a lot of teams for a guy who's like not bad.
And I agree with you.
We've drifted far from this question, but I think we haven't.
No, we're not. We're on the right track. Question
is how far do they have to get, not who would the players be?
Oh, well, they East Finals probably.
Yeah, second round. Second round might be enough, but not for any of the Bucks dudes who might also make the second round.
It has to be a 7-game series in the second round.
Yes, they have to look good. They cannot get destroyed by Toronto.
Like it'd have to be a 7-game series against Toronto, who wins the East. And it's like, right, okay, right, pretty good kind of thing.
Yes. Alternatively, too, though, like say they go 7 games in the first round against Philly and win, and then they lose in the second round. Like, I think beating Philly would be huge.
Yeah.
If they get like a 4-5 like that or something.
Yeah. I mean, right now it's gonna be hard to win a first round series. The top four in the
East is hard, man. East is hard again.
Yeah, the top four are solid. I mean, they're all really good teams. I think Milwaukee might not be. It depends on how Giannis plays, but I think Milwaukee is beatable. I guess of all four of the top teams,
they're the most beatable. I don't know. I have no idea. They're all looking good.
Yeah.
Next up, that was a good question. Next up from another fan show pod member, Zach Pearson at Zach A. Pearson says, this is mostly for me, actually. He said, what cycle of questions did you have to ask Vic on Media Day before you asked him about the Monstars? that was my only question I personally asked him, because everyone else asked him all the other questions that you heard on Media Day.
Were you mad at Media Day for asking that?
Huh?
People liked that you asked that?
Oh, yeah. Vic loved answering it, too.
That was the most quoted quote from Media Day, right?
That's the point of Media Day, man.
I feel like I saw the Monstar quote all around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he tweeted it first, so I asked him about it, and he blew it up.
Oh, that's right. He tweeted about it. That's right. Yep, okay. Yep. I was thinking maybe you asked him triggering the tweet and stuff like that.
The inspiration, I was trying to decide like a goofy question to ask a few guys. I was talking to Derek at iPacers blog about it, and he mentioned the Monstars thing, and I said, that is a great idea. And then I chickened out of asking anyone else that question.
So if you didn't know, if you go on the Pacers YouTube page and watch some of the Media Day interviews, you can spot Tony a few times just walking in the background.
Me walking around in the background.
It's very funny because Tony will look over at the player and then kind of like look back and keep walking. But he'll slowly do it, so you get like a clear mugshot.
I always wanted to know who it was.
You're looking and you're kind of eyeing him up, whatnot. Because there's a really funny video where is Monty, he's the one that asked the questions, right?
It was Pat Boylan.
Pat Boylan. Well, no, who was the guy next to Pat Boylan? Was it Mark?
Oh, Monty? It might have been Mark. I don't remember.
But one of them asked Turner.
Was it Wade Hoskins? Hotchkiss?
No, it was either him or Boyle. I think it was Monty.
I cannot remember.
Monty worked for the Pacers, so I think it was him. They asked him about like Turner and his muscles, whatever, and asked him to take his shirt off, and he gave this really weird look, and he walked right by during that question. Because I saw a little clip on Twitter. I'm like, oh, there's Tony right there.
There's me. I kept looking over too because they had this funny like shoe thing with the skyline right behind it. And it made me laugh every time they did it.
Nice. But Media Day mainly is kind of a cesspool.
Yeah, no, it's a good time. Well, I also looked over to see who they were talking to because the players went out of order. So I wanted to know if I would get to talk to that guy or not.
Yeah, I understand. It's mainly
it was a good day. It was very fun.
Mainly dumb. I think Media Day is kind of dumb in all sports, not just the NBA, all sports.
Hey, it's a good time to get back in the swing of things for me personally. I feel bad for the players because they hate it, but I had a good time.
It's kind of a way for the media to like be happy to congratulate themselves on a good last year and get ready for the year. It's a way to like ease themselves into the year.
And none of the answers are genuine. Like they're prepped so much.
Oh yeah, and none of them are like they're just going to talking points. Basically, it's like interviewing somebody that's like a politician. They just have their talking points.
John Luke at Bearded Tongue asks, "I'm trying to be positive on Miles in the coaching. How much longer should I give them?" I always pause before this answer. I don't think you have to give Miles any time. He's a good player. I mean, if you're asking how much time should I give him to like improve to this player that you expect him to be, I have no idea how good you expect him to be. So I can't answer that personally for you. I think if you take him as he is, then he's here. He's an effective player now. He might not be your cup of personal tea, but he's a good player now. So I don't know what to tell you on that one. With Nate, the rest of the season, because then we'll know how much last year was like a flash in the pan of luck and talent coming together all at once or him actually being effective.
So my thing with Turner, I guess, is can he just be in the game the last 5 minutes, I guess, right? That's the biggest thing. And there are times when he can and times when he can't. And it's what, you know what I mean? It's like whatever weighs it. You know, what happens more often is the right way to say that. Like against Boston, I thought he was just so atrocious in terms of like the two turnovers and the offensive foul and stuff like that, that like he just couldn't be on the court because he couldn't be trusted to not screw it up. But then you watched other games like Miami and Chicago, he was great in court. Like he needed to be out there. So it's I guess it's 50 games in, if they play 15 close games, it's how many is he playing the last 5 minutes of the close games? And how many of it is because he can't be on the court? How many because the Sabonis mentioned, how many of it is because of foul trouble? I mean, there's all things like that. But I would give it to probably like February 6th, which is the 2 days before the trade deadline. And then I go to the end of the season. And then I would say, you evaluate what can he do well, what can he do well, and, you know, are we overpaying him or not? You know, that's the point. And that's where I think that's the whole point of this is like, are they overpaying him? Are they rightly paying him? I think this rate, he's probably a little overpaid, but not like an egregious amount. $18 million is not, he's probably a $15 million player on the open market. So, but you can give him about that long before you have to reset your expectations. You know, you look at him defensively, what he's doing on the defensive end before you sort of say, okay, he's been bad.
I think you have to rethink expectations every year. And I think people have really struggled with that with Turner more than any player like ever.
Yeah, and I think also if he's not taking any threes, like, what's the order of 3-point percentage is, like, by 40, 50 games?
Yeah, holy cow, it's bad right now.
If it's this bad, then that's a bad indication for a future
yes, it NBA is. Player.
Because that's – I mean, you know, was Andre Roberson is maybe one of the best defensive players in the league, but he can barely be on the court half the time because he can't score. And that's a huge deal if you can't play half the time. Like, it can just completely destroy you as a player. And then with the coaching staff, yeah, you hit on the head. End of the year, see where they go, what, you know – the playoffs, they'll get challenged. Can you make an adjustment that works? You know, I think Millen kind of made a semi-adjustment, and then he got beat again on game 7 by the Ty Lue adjustment to play Tristan Thompson. You know, I think he should have played Vic more in that game 7. You know, do or die, play Vic 45 minutes. Who cares? I mean, Vic will play it. You have to play him. That's what you have to watch because that's, you know, McMillan's proven himself. He's a 42-45 win coach every year. I mean, he's in his days in Portland, he was that way. He's proven that. He can get your team to, like, a certain level. It's whether in the playoffs he can get you over the hump that, you know, you really couldn't get over with Vogel after Hibbert and West left and stuff like that. So can he get you to that next level? Can he win you a playoff round series? Because then he's staying.
Yeah, McMillan's really tough. The coaching is so tough to evaluate from the outside.
I mean, right. I mean, it's fair to say McMillan is gets you 45 wins every year, it seems like. That's where he's been his career. Like, that's what he does. And so it's in the playoffs being able to, you know, you're down. You're up 3-1, but you make an adjustment still to actually, like, not, you know, go, you know what I mean, something like that. You make an adjustment to try to win the series. You make an adjustment, you know, you save something in your back pocket for a game 7 like Ty Lue did with Tristan Thompson. Like, just those kind of things that, you know, I don't – Ty Lue isn't, like, the greatest coach ever, but that was a really smart move. He held Thompson out, hoping he could win without him, and just said, I'm going to use this card. I'm going to have to. And he used it, and the Cavs won, what, like 5 straight games after that? They won that game and then swept the Raptors. So, I mean, that's the kind of things you have to – he has to kind of fare with the rosters, like – when, you know, do I at some point use the Sabonis starting card in the playoffs? Do I hold that back? And then at some point I say, okay, I'm going to start him or whatever it is. Or the Kyle Quinn move is just something there. You can see it exploit them there. Just something to throw the other team off if they have a shot.
Yes, I like that answer. Should we talk about my bookie and then come back to 2 more questions?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that. So I will go first on story time today. And then Adam will talk about a fun bet on my bookie. I have found a fun way to win money this year, if you like gambling. Betting the Grizzlies under is astoundingly easy. they've already played the Jazz 3 times, so it might be unfair, but every single time they played the Jazz, they were under. They had an under game against the Suns. They had an under game against the Nuggets, where neither team scored 90. It was insane. They had a game against the Kings, where both teams were below 100. They're just a very low-scoring team, almost as low-scoring as the Pacers every night. But the Pacers over-unders are a lot more accurate. So on my book, you can bet the Grizzlies over-unders and make some money.
Yeah, if you use the promo code LOCKED ON, you get a $1 match for every dollar you put down, first deposit up to $1,000. The bet I'm looking at right now is the Carmelo Anthony next team. It's kind of funny. The favorite in the clubhouse is any Chinese team at plus 140. Thought that was funny. And then the lowest odds are any big 3 team at plus 4,000. And then there's a bunch of, you know, random NBA teams, Lakers, Sixers, Blazers in there. So that's an interesting bet. I would probably lean towards betting the Lakers right now. I think he could end up with LeBron and that team of misfit that seems like out there in Los Angeles. So not bad. Plus 500, you know, put down $1, win 5. But you can do that on my book. If you use the promo code locked on, that's LOCKEDON, locked on. Get $1 for every dollar you put down, up to $1,000.
All right, we got 2 more, Adam, if we can muster this. A lot of mailbagging the last couple of days. First up is Nate K. That's K-A-Y. His name on Twitter is N-80K. So it's Nate K. He said, do you think the Pacers need to shoot more 3-pointers? Also, why does it feel like McBuckets is not getting any touches? Should we drop more plays for shooters? yes, they should draw up more plays for shooters. That would be a great idea. Kalen wrote about it. I wrote about it. Everybody's writing about it. It's not that like you just walk down and chuck a three. You know, that would not work with the roster they have. But drawing up plays for shooters would be a very, very welcome thing that they do not do as much as I like.
I mean, honestly, it might work. I mean, That actually might work, Tony.
Vic's the only guy I would be comfortable with taking, like, pull up, and Tyreek would be the guys I'm comfortable with taking, like, actual, like, off the dribble pull up threes consistently.
I don't know. Bogan's not terrible. I don't know if he'd give him a chance.
He's a sweet catch and shooter. I'm not sure how much I love him shooting off the dribble.
Let's put it this way. They are shooting the second least amount of 3-point attempts per game.
Oh, they should absolutely shoot more. I'm not denying that.
24 and a half. The leading is the Rockets at 41. Yeah, they should probably be somewhere in the 30s. I mean,
this doesn't cater to their offensive style. So, maybe you alter your style if that's the case. But still.
Okay, so the Sixers, who start a guy who doesn't shoot threes, who doesn't shoot the ball, are averaging 33 a game. Yeah, they start Redick and they got Embiid to take threes, but they literally have a single player who will never shoot a 3-point shot and they're still putting up 33 a game. They just need to put up more.
Yes, I agree. And they should do that by running plays for shooters, not just checking.
Yeah, no, I agree. But sometimes you just got to like take the three. You got to just take the, you know, if you got a little window, just take it. Or you got to, you know, run plays to get Bogan open 25 feet from the rim instead of 23 or something like that. Like they seem like they're hunting for the perfect shot and then they get screwed out of that and take some fallback too. Just take an early three in the shot clock if you can. If you see an opening, just take it.
Yeah, if it's open, I'm not mad at all if they take it. If they fake out of one more open three, I'm going to lose my freaking mind.
Yes, that's the worst. Just, they should have no hesitation to
Except for Thad. Thad can fake out of open threes. Everyone else.
You know what? He probably, no, because just take the corner three, you miss it. But if you make it, you can make enough of them to maybe actually guard in the perimeter for one.
Corner threes, Thad can not fake out of. Everywhere else, Thad fake out of your
three. Teams don't guard Thad in the perimeter.
No, they do not.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's afraid to take them because he misses enough of them. He's going to kill his value as a player. But if he doesn't take enough of them, he also continues to perpetuate this idea that he can't make it.
Yes. So, yes, I think they should run more plays to – and as a result, run more plays to get open threes to have the result be more threes. But I am not a proponent of just chucking. Houston gets away with it because they have the MVP and Chris Paul.
Well, and they didn't get away with it, too. They missed – They lost playoff game because they couldn't keep making them.
They lost. They got knocked out of the league last year because they couldn't.
I agree they should look for better shots. But at some point, if you're going to just take contested long twos, why not contest the long threes?
Yes, I agree with that. Instead of a long two, anything.
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers last year, and that Chris Herringer does a really good breakdown, where they were able to exploit teams just leaving you open at 15 feet. Like teams would just leave guys open at 12 feet, and they just shot above 50% on those shots, I think, enough, or at least a higher enough percentage that it was like, okay, it kind of counters out the 3-point shot because you shoot the same percentage per point. But this year, teams have kind of caught on to that, and they're just kind of they're holding them into like kind of, they're running them off a 3-point line, but then forcing them into these zones where they are like a lot more, less efficient. And they're also not making their long twos the same rate they did last year, too. So that's another huge issue.
That is a huge issue. That is a massive issue. Yeah, I think we agree mostly on that answer. I think the long twos are very bad. Very, very bad. I wish someone would have asked specifically about long twos. Last one, courtesy of a text message, not on Twitter, from my brother-in-law, @Pat_Smith3, says, this is kind of like when we had earlier, would playing Vic at point guard and Tyreek at shooting guard make any sense at some point for the Pacers? Yes.
Yeah, that's the move we always thought that was going to happen. That was the next level move for this team to win maybe to be successful in the playoffs. So it's just,
you know what's so funny? And maybe this is the result of Collison shooting poorly from the outside. But in my head, when he asked that question, I thought, oh, that'd be really good with a shooter. Like, but they've played with Collison and it doesn't really work. And when they play with Kojo, it really works. So,
well, they put Bojan in there.
They should. Yeah, I agree. That's what I was thinking originally when I thought it. But
do we think the best lineup for this team possibly is Vic, Tyreek, Kojo, Bojan, Turner?
I think, or Turner or Sabonis. Yeah,
Matchup dependent
at center. I think that's 100% their best lineup this year.
Well, I think if you put Turner out there, you bring enough defense. Whereas Sabonis,
I don't know, man. I feel like Thad's a part of the best lineup though, instead of Tyreek.
I know, but offensively, that's probably the best offensive punch, right? You still get enough good defense, but you get enough good offense at the same time because you got both.
It's close. It's very close.
I think it's enough. I understand, and I'm not trying to knock Thad. I think Thad's a good player. I just think he is very limited offensively in a way that we have yet, you know.
What is more limited, Bojan on D or Thad on offense?
That's the question, right? That's what you're fighting.
I think the answer is Bojan on D.
The thing is, can you hide Bojan enough?
Yeah,
effective when you can't hide Thad on offense.
You cannot. No, you can pray that his duck-ins are great.
That's the thing. It's easier to hide a guy on defense is to hide on offense, because in defense you can just put him in the corner and let him be there. Where in offense, you sort of they will force the ball to that guy, so the defense will make you get the ball out to your worst player.
Yes,
that is. I mean, in that lineup, the goal of the team, we either get turn a 3-point line of a defense of the other team or get Kojo the ball. But Kojo is good enough passing that he can get out of it to find another guy, where Thad is not quite good enough passing.
And you'd hope in that lineup that Kojo would realize, oh, there's three better dribblers than me. I better not dribble ever.
Well, I think I like Kojo from corner three. Like, I would love him to take corner three. Yep. And if Turner has the ball, you can just pick a pop with him and do things like that, where, like, they try to get the ball in Turner's hands, you can kind of make it an efficient points.
Ideally, you pick a pop with him this year. That would not be the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, right? Last year, I probably wrote 3 or 4 times at the pick and pop. Like, it just kept working. And this year, they're not running it at all.
I wish I had synergy so I could run that really quick. But it is what it is.
I mean, I think from the eye test, they're not running pick and pop. They've run
16-3.
So clearly, they're not in 14 games. They're not running the pick and pop at all.
I know the team number would be less. I want to know how much less.
A lot less.
A lot less, I believe.
That's all. We don't need to be empirical here. I'm just going to give it with the old eye test.
I have last year's play type, like amount they did it ranks and like points per possession ranks from synergy. I wish I had this year's. That'd be nice.
I mean, you can probably look it up at some point.
No, synergy costs money, and I don't have
money. No, the NBA stats keep track of the cap plays that run there. They keep track of
them. Yeah, synergy's is better.
Well, yeah. Synergy is points per possession. I understand, but you can get enough of a rough estimate.
Yes. It's bunk too, though, because it has Gordon Hayward as the 8th best cutter in the league, because he was really good in that 5 minutes.
Oh. Boy, with NBA stats, you also have to go in and you can cut out for minutes. And
Yeah.
I do that. You have to cut out. You have to like always put a filter in for like games played and minutes played per game or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes. I guess last year was like, I always put 50 games in as the filter.
Did you know that Miles Turner was the 16th best play point per possession cutter in the NBA in 2016?
So that's 2 seasons ago?
Yep.
Well, I mean, 2 seasons ago, I thought that was probably his best we ever seen from him, actually, right?
Fit well with PG. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, he played really well off PG. Mm-hmm. That's where you get this expectation game, because you're like, after 2 seasons, it's like, oh my God, he's going to be like amazing.
Now he's playing with Vic and playing with PG is so different. I mean, not like so different, but it's different.
Actually, he should fit better with Vic, because Vic goes in the lane and that should leave him open.
No. I think he fits better with PG.
Why is that?
Because PG cuts more and plays off ball better and makes the defense move around when he doesn't have the ball and when he has the ball, which Vic is only one of those two things.
I don't know. Vic does that. First of all, he has to have the ball because nobody else can do anything. But off the ball, they're watching Vic. They don't leave him. Like, he does do things off the ball that drag the defense in.
I think Paul George is a better cutter than Vic.
That's probably fair. I agree with that. Can we do one last question that I have?
I was going to say, I don't have any more. So this is yes, we can. And it can't be Marina's.
No, it's fine. Now that we are a year and 5 months since the Paul George trade.
Ooh.
That's a year, 4 months, and 14 days, June 30th, 2017. Did the Pacers win that trade?
Doesn't matter. Does not matter who wins trades. Sometimes it makes sense to do a trade even if you don't win it.
All right. For all our podcast listeners out there, mm-hmm. You need to harass Tony. Then you need to stop whipping out of this question and just answer the question straight up. Did they win or did they lose?
I will never answer this question.
You're the worst.
Did they win the Kawhi Leonard trade?
Who?
The Pacers.
No, they lost it. That's fair.
They lost the Kawhi trade are allowed to admit that they won the Vic trade. But if you cannot concede that they lost the Kawhi trade,
of course they lost the Kawhi trade. They traded the opportunity to have They traded the opportunity of having two of the top 10 players in the league for George Hill. Now, at the moment, you can justify in the moment, but in hindsight, no, you can't justify.
Yeah, people love that. They love it made sense at the time. Well, like, okay, if we're evaluating trades at the time, they got destroyed in the Paul George trade.
Yeah, no, I can, you know, I mean. Maybe not. The only thing he said about Paul George is maybe Kevin Pritchard knew Victor was going to be the superstar. That's why he traded for him.
Yeah, maybe he did. I mean, no, that's a calculated risk that he won, so I'll give him a ton of credit. I would not have made that risk.
You listen to Ryan Russillo, and Ryan Russillo basically said you would probably rather, if you're going to pick a guy to go like to battle with in the NBA, you'd rather probably have Vic than PG. And that's what he said.
Right now, oh yeah. Yeah.
Right now, today. And that's without even talking Sabonis, the Pacers probably won the trade. Then you throw Sabonis in, and that's like they maybe gave up two. I mean, I still want to see Sabonis play 35 minutes a game if he can stay out of foul trouble. I think he could be an all-star if he did that, to be honest. So I think the Oklahoma State Thunder got a great player in Paul George, but they probably gave up two really good players that they couldn't develop with Russ there because of their culture, but that the Pacers were able to. And they probably
Paul George fits off Russ better than Vic does, too. Like, it could, in theory, be a win-win trade.
No, it is a win-win trade, but it's sort of like it points to a systemic issue in Oklahoma City where you couldn't develop two guys who are going to be once a
guaranteed all-star. Set the record for usage that year.
No, but they couldn't use them right. I didn't say they didn't use them.
No, I mean it's hard to like it's hard to use anyone correctly, not even just those guys.
No, and it
when Russ is what like 45% of possessions he finishes.
Okay, so let me put it this way: if you knew Vic and Spuds were going to be as good as they are now, and they had traded Russ away for some nice package, would that be a better team than the team they have now?
Vic Sabonis and a nice package for Russ?
I'm trying to think who was traded around the time that Paul George. I mean, like, traded Russ for Jimmy Butler straight up. I mean, that would probably be a better team they have currently.
I don't know about that.
Be close. Certainly be close.
I don't know about that.
That'd be a big, you have roughly the same big two with Steven Adams and Sabonis.
Yeah, Sabonis at the four is not effective for them.
Yeah. Okay, so then you flip Steven Adams.
Draft Zion Williamson, right?
No, then they go back in time and get LeBron James.
Yeah. That's a maybe. I have no idea. Russ is so hard to like think about because I think Russ is amazing, but like I get why people don't like Russ.
I understand Russ is amazing. I just think there's an issue when you have two players like Sabonis. And I get Sabonis makes more sense of not being able to flourish because of Steven Adams and you couldn't really 5 minutes, but Vic, they should have been able to develop Vic. Like, if you had a Paul George type player instead of having Russ or something like that, you would develop Vic better.
Yeah, probably. You have to think about Orlando too. Like, he went years without it.
Yeah,
years without development. I'm not going to pin like all the Thunder can't do it.
No, and the Thunder, honestly, he's still my development player. He became if they just give him another year. Actually, too. There's a good argument that maybe he learned from Russ that that first year he wasn't in great shape still, and he finally got in the shape he needed to be a good NBA player. And they give him an opportunity. They had waited, you know, 2 months in the season to trade for Paul George. They should probably not have done it because they would have saw Vic's kind of flourish.
Yeah, which is you can blame them for playing him at the four. And
Sabonis was young, and you do that because he was the throw-in. I mean, the Pacers developed Sabonis. They helped develop him, so that's that credit. But, like, I guess let's put it this way. If you had 3 months into last year, if you knew Vic was going to be where he was, and Sabonis, you think the Thunder would have made the trade still?
Wait. Repeat the question. I'm sorry.
Go back to 2017. Pretend it's December 15th, 2017, right? I'm right here. If where Vic was at that point in 2017 for the Pacers was that way for the Thunder, do you think the Thunder would still trade Vic and a player for Paul George on that day?
That's a good question. That is right.
And that's where it kind of makes it like maybe the Pacers won the trade. That's the way you can justify
that
it.
That is a good way to think about it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because Paul George's value would have theoretically been way down.
Yeah, because on an expired 1 year deal. I mean,
they traded him.
I guess knowing you have Paul George for five more years at that moment.
Well, then yeah, I think they would do it.
I don't know. Still, I don't know.
It's so hard to do revisionist history.
No, it is hard. It really just shows how really fair that trade was for both sides.
Yeah, that is a good.
And the only reason Indiana might be better off with it is because they weren't going to be able to keep George anyways, and they got a guy that's going to keep him competitive for 4 or 5
months. Pacers situation, given the one they were in, is a win. If you want me to call it a win because of that, then yes, they won.
Well, and they're probably one of the only successful situations where you trade away your best player and actually still remain just as good.
Yes. Hey, I mean, the Kings went from really bad with Boogie to really bad without Boogie.
But I didn't say that. I said from good and remain good. I mean, how many teams trade away their best player and remain good? It's hard. Right. Really hard. I mean, the Spurs are trying it, and they might be able to do it.
The Spurs are doing okay at it. I'm personally skeptical. Everyone's saying the Timberwolves are going to still remain competitive. I'm pretty skeptical, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the Timberwolves is a little bit different situation because of all the young talent they have there, so they might be good again in a year or two, but I don't know. I mean, it's amazing, honestly. It's kind of pure luck to what happened to the Pacers, to be honest.
For those of you curious, because I said not Marina's question, Marina asked me on Twitter why I hate fun and fighting. And she also said, what song should every player's warm-up song be? I have no idea.
Yeah, no idea either.
I have no idea. Living on a Moment by Lifehouse.
Sure.
Just to name a song. That okay. That was the worst end. We were talking about basketball so good.
Yeah, we were so good till you ruined that. I had pretty much convinced you to say Pacers won the Paul George trade, and then you ended on that. I got you there. I had taken you there almost. I had almost gotten you there.
I spent all day thinking about who the Pacers could sign next summer.
There's not a lot. There's not a lot of, like, really.
I got a few. I don't know why I'm looking so far ahead. I need to enjoy them being a good team.
Because that's what the NBA is. You don't worry about you don't look at the next game. You worry about the next free agency, the next trade deadline. It's a way
I worry about the Pacers championship roster iteration.
Yeah, and I guess I don't know what their best chance is to get the championship, because I thought
their best chance is trading for a disgruntled Draymond Green and getting like Kyrie in the summer or something.
Their best chance was Turner becoming an all-star, which isn't going to happen. I'm still holding that hope that you can play Sabonis 35 minutes and he could not get in foul trouble, but he could put up 20 a game and be an all-star. I really kind of think
get in foul trouble, you get better at defensive positioning. So,
okay, that's fair. But
his starter. They could both learn a lot from each other.
Yeah, what if you just put him? Caitlin said this a long time ago, but just put them together in a machine.
I know.
One NBA player, you'd have the best NBA, but you'd have Nikolai Jokic, sort of, not defensively, but offensively, you would.
Oh, yeah, you'd have Jokic with good D. That's the best player in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have Towns. Well, Towns good D.
That's also the best
player. Young centers have good play good defense. Just
you know, you have Joel Embiid, who might be the best player. I mean, might be MVP, not the best player right now.
Yeah, you're right. You'd have Joel Embiid, who's one of the best players in the league. You'd have Joel Embiid without the injury history.
Yeah, you'd have Joel Embiid without the injury history and the Twitter account.
Which, yeah, fair. Although I imagine if Miles Turner was that good, he might have that same
account on Twitter. I don't like to imagine if I was really good, I'd be like KD on Twitter. Like, if people came at me, I'd be like, dude, I make $35 million.
Just playing basketball, not even off the court. I make another 30 from Nike. I got Nike unarmored to bid to death on me, basically.
I'm glad you thought something anecdotal about me. I make $35 million, and I'm one of the best three players in the world.
Honestly, if I had that kind of money, I wouldn't even be on Twitter. Are you kidding? There's that much money you can do. Like, there's so many other things you can do but that you don't need.
I mean, I'm not going to judge what they do to have fun.
No, I understand. But like, you should just be Instagramming your life, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, you have nice car, nice house, nice vacations, nice whatever. You're the most famous guy in any room you walk in, basically.
Yeah, I just go to the mall. Stand around.
Terrible. You got harassed by so many people. Maybe you snake.
On that note.
On that note, we can end the podcast.
Our mailbag show. Thank you guys for submitting mailbag questions. We enjoy mailbags. I just was looking at their schedule and I clicked off the page like an idiot.
They play Friday, then Saturday, and then
I meant when our next mailbag would be.
Oh God, who knows.
Sometime around Christmas, before Christmas, probably.
Yeah, December sometime.
Maybe we'll do a New Year's one or something. So stay on the lookout for these, because these are fun for us and I think for you guys. So be on the lookout for that. I am now, because Caitlin has changed my Tyreek Evans article. I'm now writing about Kyle Quinn, so we'll be on the lookout for that.
I'm on a call. You should not. Caitlin's a great writer, but you shouldn't be afraid.
No, I'm not. I'm not afraid. It's just that everything I was writing about was in her article. Like every single point I had.
Well, too bad. You should have posted yours first. You knew it was coming. She tweeted out. She teased it. She did a Monday, or what was it? Came out yesterday. She was,
look, man, when you work 12-hour days and then go home and immediately do an hour and a half of Locked On Pacers, you don't have a lot of time to write.
Excuses.
I know. Whatever.
I'm just kidding. I only write on weekends mainly now, so.
No, I wish I should do that.
I just decided that I'm like only write Saturday and Sundays, and I do my job really, because I work a lot out. No way, you work 12 hours. Okay, calm down. You work like probably 10.
This week only I've done that. If you guys are wondering what the after and before podcast banter is, it's exactly the 2 minutes you just heard.
It goes on to for another 25.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. Oh God. We'll see you tomorrow to talk Heat and Aloha Hawks. Yeah, have a great rest of